It's Thursday, November 20th, 2008, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Well, hello, Stashers. Welcome back to the podcast. We're glad to see you here. I want to remind you that all the stories we cover in our hemp headlines are also available on our Stash blog at stash.normal.org. There's also a mechanism for leaving comments so you can begin communicating your points of view on the Stash blog. Let's get a discussion going out there. And if you've got any hot news tips for the Stash, you can always send them to stash@normal.org. Well, the holidays are almost upon us, and some people are starting to take some vacations. A person who truly deserves a vacation is our good friend Terry Joyce down there in Hollywood, California. She's going to be visiting with friends and family and also begins shooting on a new movie that we'll talk to her about come December. So for today's 420 comedy, we're going to replay our visit with Detective Sergeant Harry Palmer Jr., who in reality is comedian Ron Osborne. So make sure you know it's satire. He's not really a cop. Also, we're continuing to break down all the audio and video from the Normal National Conference in Berkeley, California back in October. Today, I'm going to give you the address from George Rohrabacher, who's a member of the Normal Board of Directors, and his noting of the 20 millionth marijuana arrest in America since 1937. It's an engaging speech that really makes you think about the depths of this prohibition of cannabis in America. Okay, folks, it's a week before Thanksgiving, so I guess we'd better load up a corncob pipe and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Council bans sale of single cigars in bid to curb youth's marijuana use. From the Washington Post. The Prince George's County Council adopted one of the nation's most sweeping restrictions on the sale of cigars yesterday in an effort to curb a growing trend among urban youths of using hollowed-out cigars to smoke marijuana. The council voted 8-1 to ban the sale of single cigars, requiring stores to sell them in packages of at least 5. The new law will also make it easier to charge someone possessing a cigar with a drug paraphernalia offense. Tobacco stores that specialize in cigar sales and often sell high-end cigars for as much as $5 apiece or more are excluded from the legislation's restrictions, as are other locations that are sometimes age-restricted, including golf courses, fraternal lodges, bars, and restaurants. Sylvia Quinton, who works with the Suitland-based Substance Abuse Treatment Education Prevention Network, said use of short, fat cigars, often called blunts, to smoke marijuana has, quote, become embedded in youth culture, end quote. Blunts make frequent cameos in rap music and movies. She said the new law cannot stamp out the glorification of blunts, but raising the price might discourage some youths. Excuse me, but aren't tobacco sales of any kind restricted to adults 18 years or over? If you've got a problem with youth buying single cigars at convenience stores, maybe you need to crack down on ID enforcement. Or how about promoting the raise of the tobacco age to 21, along with alcohol? Funny how nobody ever wants to propose that. It is also funny to me that it is the hollowing out of the addictive, deadly tobacco and replacing it with non-addictive, non-toxic cannabis is what has driven these do-gooders to want to restrict black kids, urban youths, access to cheap, fruit-flavored single cigars in convenience stores. If you're Rush Limbaugh or Bill Cosby, feel free to enjoy one of our fine $5 single cigars at the exclusive lodge, but if you're a young black man in the city, you've got to cough up the dough for 5 cheap-ass cigars at a time, otherwise you'll just use them for blunts. Am I the only one who thinks that this won't have any effect whatsoever on how many urban youths in Washington, D.C. will be smoking blunts, while also creating a great new way for dealers to make even more money by buying cheap cigars in packs of 5 and selling them in singles for a markup? The law was opposed by tobacco distributors and the Altria Group, the parent company of Philip Morris. Last year, Altria bought the company that makes Black and Mild cigars, a popular brand for single sales. A lobbyist for the distributors said the intent of the law was laudable, but he said the law will only create a cottage industry of people who buy cigars in packs of 5 and then sell them individually on the streets. Oh, great. Now I'm agreeing with a tobacco industry lobbyist. Record-breaking seizures of marijuana throughout California in 2008. From the International Business Times. Sacramento, California. California Department of Justice, Bureau of Narcotic Enforcement, and other participants of the CAMP program, including the Drug Enforcement Administration Field Division offices in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego, in conjunction with the United States Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of California, announced record-breaking seizures of marijuana seized from California public and private lands during CAMP season and Operation Green Acres 2. CAMP, the Campaign Against Marijuana Planting, reported a second year of record-breaking numbers of marijuana plants eradicated during the 2008 season at 2.9 million. Of the 2.9 million plants, 2 million were seized from public lands, while the remainder was seized from private lands. Marijuana eradication season begins in July and continues through October. The counties with the highest numbers of eradicated plants for 2008 are Lake County, Tulare County, Shasta County, Mendocino County, and Humboldt County. All counties listed, except for Humboldt, had an increase in the number of marijuana plants eradicated. Last year, 53 individuals were arrested and 41 weapons were seized. During the 2008 season, 143 individuals were arrested and 142 weapons seized. Let's see, 2.9 million uprooted marijuana plants. How many of those were non-psychoactive feral hemp, the plant that grows wild, is tended by nobody, and has such low THC it will never get you high? Unfortunately, nobody's telling. See, the government used to publish the numbers of plants they eradicated and would break those down into columns telling us exactly which kind of plants they were. Year after year, the percentage of the marijuana eradicated that was hemp was 98 to 99%. Then we would point out how foolish and wasteful it was to use cops and helicopters to do not much more than pulling weeds. So now, rather than change a foolish and wasteful policy, they just don't publish those numbers anymore. The eradication of marijuana certainly hasn't affected Californians' use of marijuana. Rather than address the root cause, the prohibition of a popular commodity that creates the profit motive and need for clandestine grow sites on public land, cops would rather have their easy outdoors sunshine gig, ripping up plants and transporting them by helicopter, where their seeds fall from the sky to perpetuate next year's round of feral hemp eradication. Americans for Safe Access sues California Department of Motor Vehicles for revoking driver's license of medical marijuana patient. Merced, California. A lawsuit was filed this week by medical marijuana advocacy organization Americans for Safe Access, or ASA, against the California Department of Motor Vehicles, or DMV, on behalf of Rose Johnson, a 53-year-old patient from Atwater. Despite Ms. Johnson's clean driving record, not having caused an accident in 37 years of driving, the DMV revoked her license on July 26, 2008, because of her status as a medical marijuana patient. The DMV refused to renew Ms. Johnson's license only after obtaining her medical records and finding out that she was a qualified medical marijuana patient. According to the DMV, Ms. Johnson's license was revoked, quote, because of an addiction to or habitual use of a drug, end quote, thereby rendering her unable to safely operate a motor vehicle, even though no evidence existed to substantiate this claim. ASA Chief Counsel Joe Elford, who is representing Ms. Johnson in her claim against the DMV, said, quote, the DMV cannot simply disregard California's medical marijuana law. When the voters of California enacted the Compassionate Use Act, they never intended to authorize the DMV to strip medical marijuana patients of their driver's licenses. The DMV should not be in the business of revoking the licenses of drivers like Ms. Johnson simply because she is a medical marijuana patient, end quote. Advocates assert that the DMV policy of suspending and revoking the licenses of medical marijuana patients is widespread, occurring in at least 8 California counties, including Alameda, Butte, Contra Costa, Glen, Merced, Placer, Sacramento, and Sonoma. License revocations by the DMV, which have been based on a person's status as a medical marijuana patient, are often rationalized by calling the drivers drug abusers, despite no evidence of the claim. I just recently drove through Northern California. There are many drivers whose licenses need to be suspended, and it has nothing to do with medical cannabis. In fact, I think some of those drivers could use some medical cannabis to calm their road rage. But seriously, this is part of the institutional backlash against medical cannabis. They have lost at the ballot box and in the court of public opinion. So now, resigned to the fact that medical cannabis isn't going anywhere, they're making it difficult to get and costlier to keep. Sure, your doctor says that using cannabis helps alleviate your pain, but is that worth your driver's license? How about your job? You sure you don't want to just take the approved drugs? The ones that poison your liver and drain your bank account and have half a commercial's worth of side effects? You really want to be unemployed and unable to drive so you can grow your 3 marijuana plants, carry your 2 ounces, and get actual relief from your symptoms that don't leave you in a narcotic stupor? Your choice, your health or your car, your medical marijuana or your job. That's what it's coming down to. I've heard nobody yet propose revoking the driver's licenses of those who use prescription sleep aids like Ambien. Many other prescriptions specifically tell the user not to operate a vehicle. Perhaps we should just do a temporary driver's license suspension for the length of the prescription. And somebody please tell me why there are still parking lots at bars? There can't be that many spaces for taxis and designated drivers. You can't look at me with a straight face in a state where Paris Hilton, Britney Spears, and Lindsay Lohan all get to keep their driver's licenses and tell me that a medical cannabis patient should lose their license for life.
In 1937, Samuel Caldwell was the first person arrested for marijuana in the United States. In 2008, the 20 millionth person was arrested for marijuana in the United States. After 71 years of his failed prohibitionist policy,
it's time to say
enough and demand a change. Normal is calling on you to help spread the word, and in doing so, you could win $2,500 in our 2008 Pro Cannabis Law Reform Ad Contest. Just create a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation explaining why we need to end adult marijuana prohibition. Theme ideas, examples from past contests, and the contest rules are all available at normal.org. Just look for the Pro Cannabis Ad Contest banner. You could win your share of $10,000 in prizes, and the grand prize $2,500 winner will be featured in upcoming Normal web and television campaigns. Join our Pro Cannabis Ad Contest today. Deadline for entries is January 15th, 2009.
Now it's time to take a look at 420 Comedy with the star of Hollyweed Live. You know her from the season one of Last Comic Standing on NBC. It's Terry Joyce.
Oh, well, thank you.
Hey, Terry, I had quite a fun time in your state. I wasn't down in Southern California. I was up in Northern California at Berkeley for the Normal Conference. And I got to tell you, I got my first opportunity to go to one of your California dispensaries. It was a lot of fun. You guys are really, doing well down there with the whole dispensary scene. It was quite amazing. I mean, it's like a little coffee shop and they had a little, like a binder full of buds, the binder of buds. You flip through and it's like, oh, let's see, strawberry cough, AK-47, shishkaberry. It was the most amazing thing. I just think that's amazing. And, I know you've had a lot of experience down the dispensaries too, right?
Yes, I have. I've actually done a lot of fundraising and have gone into different dispensaries, and they're quite different in many ways. My favorite is the pharmacy.
Yeah.
And they have three stores. They have one in West Hollywood, and then they have also Westwood. And there's another location that I can't recall at the moment, Beverly Hills, I think, or something. But they're very you go in and you feel that it's a healing center.
Yeah.
You know, like the doors wide open on Santa Monica Boulevard, and you know, you check in. These guys have computers and they, you know, reference your recommendation once you've been, you know, approved. And you go in the back. Sometimes there's music playing. There might be a musician. There's some nice artwork around, and there's an entire refrigerator of different edibles that you can buy, and just jars of different types of strains. And there's a menu that you can read from, and you know what whether it's sativa or what it is, and indica, and
oh, yeah.
It's just really, if they have other herbs that you can buy for different things, and to me that's like the best prototype of what a medical marijuana, you know, dispensary to me should look like.
Yeah,
it's more, you know, it has a holistic healing kind of feel to it.
Yeah, that's the next thing I was wondering too, is, you know, this was my first and only dispensary over there in the Oaksterdam area of Oakland, California, and I just wonder what the differences are between the dispensaries. If maybe, like, I kind of felt like I was the Red Cross observer going to the prison camp and only being shown the good prisoners, you know? like, are there some bad dispensaries out there?
There's some that when you go, you feel like that you're being checked out going into like a nightclub with a security guard, and you know, there's some that are very cold and you feel like you're doing something criminal.
Yeah.
And you know, some of them are just run with different kinds of consciousness, I think. You know, there's some that, you know, they feel like, for instance, some of the certain dispensaries have been signed on with the moratorium. which means that you somehow you had to be registered to be protected under the law that we have, right, you know, as it stands in California. Some of the dispensaries didn't make it to the moratorium in time. You know, they're trying to get close down the dispensaries, our government is, because they're sending letters to the landowner of the buildings in which they rent the space in,
sure.
Saying that if they don't evict their tenants, they're going to seize all their assets. And some of the dispensaries have gone down because of that reason. There's no real code in terms of like, how the medicine should be approached. Some places look like you're doing a drug deal, and some places look like you're going to get well.
Yeah.
And therein lies the confusion, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. And let's bring in another expert on this this subject here. You're always bringing us the most interesting people to talk about, and lest anyone accuse us of only preaching to the choir and only talking to people that we agree with, I think your guest today is going to give us a different perspective on all this. Why don't you take care of the introduction, Terry?
There's different, the same with the dispensaries, how they're different. So is our jurisdiction in Southern California. A lot of our cops, for instance, West Hollywood is a very lenient city in terms of medical marijuana. It's a sanctuary city, meaning that you can smoke marijuana on the street and you won't, or have it in your possession. You're not going to be arrested in West Hollywood. But say, for instance, San Bernardino County or different parts of Los Angeles, they have stricter laws and the cops really come after you. And I do have a plea. We have Sergeant Detective Harry Palmer Jr.
I see.
From the Los Angeles County Police Department to share, to share his views on being a cop and how he feels about marijuana and
well,
all that kind of
well,
stuff.
Detective Harry Palmer, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash, sir.
Hello.
Detective? I don't know.
Are you there?
Yes, detective.
Hello. Hi there. Sorry about that. I'm in my a cruiser right now.
Oh, I see. I see. And keeping the streets safe in Los Angeles, I assume.
Well, yeah. You might say that.
So what's your perspective, detective, on all... Well, that rhymes. What is your perspective on these medical marijuana dispensaries that seem to be cropping up all over your county?
Well, I got to tell you... First off, let me just say off the bat, I'm voting for McCain, okay? So
okay.
I'm not, I don't know where you stand on that, and if it's some kind of a setup to make him look bad, but, I came out of here out of respect for the law.
Oh, yes, nothing about McCain.
It's all about the law for me, Radical and Terry. You see, because even though I may vote for McCain, I know that he's wrong. On many, many, many items.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter what he's wrong on. It matters that he believes in the law, and I believe in the law. If the law changes, I uphold the law. When alcohol prohibition ended, my great-great-grandfather, Harry Palmer, the first Harry Palmer, I'm actually the sixth.
Okay. Now, okay.
My son is the seventh Harry Palmer, Jr. We all go by Jr. But
okay.
My great-grandfather... He did not arrest people for drinking after the prohibition ended. As much as he hated drinking, even though he had a terrible, terrible alcohol problem, he would not arrest people after the prohibition law changed. And I will not arrest people for marijuana possession on the streets of Hollywood.
Well, that's excellent. So you don't feel any conflict then between the federal law saying it's completely illegal and the West Hollywood stance then?
I'm not under federal jurisdiction here. I praised an oath to God and to Los Angeles County, okay? And the feds, for one thing, the feds want to take our guns away. The cops, they want to take our guns away. How the hell am I going to protect myself against violent criminals? Okay? But here's the point. The pot smokers, as much as they sicken me, they're not hurting anybody. For
right.
The love of Pete... They lay around the goddamn beach and they don't do anything. All right, and you know what? Half of the reason is because they're sick, and that's why they're doing the marijuana. And that's the only reason they can do it is if they're sick. Because if they're not sick and they're doing the Mary Jane, I'm going to come down on you with the fist of fury, my friend.
I see. So the medical patients you don't have a problem with, but the healthy people that are using the marijuana, they deserve the full force of the law.
I got a problem with the medical patients too, buddy. Okay?
Okay.
Go to a goddamn doctor like a regular person, but you know what? It's the law. It's legal to have the medical marijuana. If you're going to smoke it, I'm okay with it. Because here's really the cruel, ironic twist, and I think this is why Terry brought me on the show. I actually am a medical marijuana user.
Oh, really?
I hate to say it, but goddamn it, my father and his father and his father's fathers raised us to speak the truth, even when we're wrong, which we are quite often.
Okay. So you've been a medical marijuana
it's
user?
It's funny to you. It's sure it's funny. It's funny to see that I am in this moral dilemma, but what else can I do? Because I have a terrible, terrible case of Tourette syndrome. The only thing that will quell it is the marijuana, and I found out by accident by busting a marijuana ring, inhaling some secondhand marijuana smoke. I ended up staying in the goddamn place for over an hour. I had to find evidence, and I just kept breathing and breathing, and the more I breathed, the less I cussed.
Hmm. Well, that's amazing. Hmm. That's amazing, Detective. So you do believe that there's a medical use for marijuana then?
Well, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Mike, I have a question for the detective. you're a sergeant. And you're also, you know, using medical marijuana for medicinal purposes, but are you worried about drug testing within your own department? How is there a shift on this, or what's going on there?
Well, actually, to be technical, the department that I'm with is not actually with the Los Angeles County Police Department, and it's actually, and we're not affiliated with the sheriff's office either. It's actually, and when I say we, that's also misleading, because it's actually just me. I'm a citizen patrol now.
Oh.
Because I, and Sergeant Detective, that's just an honorarium that I was given by a an online group that I do some gaming with. But basically what I do is I'm with the Tobacco Enforcement Task Force, and I make sure that people aren't smoking in public places, the tobacco. But, you know, marijuana also has smoke, so I kind of bring it under my jurisdiction. So
I see.
I think that's, you know. Well, I know that's, again, probably funny to you, that his whole family's been police officers, but he can't. He has to smoke marijuana, which his family made a living on busting people for marijuana, and, I might add, planting marijuana in people's cars so they could bust them. Because you're not going to get promoted unless you get enough. Look, I know it happens. I'm a Harry Palmer, and I will tell the truth.
We are very glad that you'll tell the truth. So, you're part of the Tobacco Enforcement Task Force here. So is it true then that people could smoke marijuana on the streets of West Hollywood, but if they were smoking a cigarette, you'd bust them?
I would tackle them to the ground. If there was a consumer near them and they were near the door within 25 feet of a door or a window, I would run and tackle them to the ground, making sure that they were not smoking tobacco. Now, the marijuana, I'm not going to tackle them. They're a patient of some sort. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the gonads to smoke out in public like that. You wouldn't think.
You wouldn't think, that's for sure. Well, Detective Harry Palmer, working alone, I guess, in Los Angeles County.
Look, it seems like I'm alone. I am the silent minority. I'm standing up and doing what a lot of people, McCain supporters mainly, would like to do, and that is to stop the people from doing things that they like doing. They should not be doing things that they enjoy. They should be doing things that I want them to do.
Well, okay. Well,
I think we can all agree on that, and if you don't, it's too bad, because that's what I want.
Okay. Detective Sergeant Harry Palmer, Jr., the 6th or 7th or however many there have been of you, thank you for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash. And, Terry, thanks a lot for another fascinating guest.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we met at the Rage in West Hollywood, so.
Oh,
you know.
I see. You were working undercover, I assume?
He did tackle a smoker, so we started talking, so. You know, I said, hey, you know, we'd like to have your opinion on the Daily Normal Audio Stash.
I see. Okay, well, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been very entertaining for our 420 comedy today.
smoke lots of weed, man. I plant that big old seed, man. I smoke every strain there is in town. From the super sticky green to the headache maxi brown, I smoke every strain there is around.
I know that I like it. I know that lots of people like it. So let's see what happens if you overdo it.
Do we have any pot smokers here today? Any at all?
My name is Doug Benson, and I'm about to get super high.
The term medical marijuana, you've basically, you drank the Kool-Aid, because there is no such thing as medical marijuana.
I'm going to smoke pot every day for 30 days
and try to remember to film it.
And my movie's going to be called Super High Me,
or Business as Usual. I haven't decided yet on the title.
I'm going to be hospitalized, I think.
Some people call it dope. Some think it smells like burning rope. I tell you, it relieves my mind.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org.
Today's Stash music comes from Brian Robbins, a man I found while randomly searching for the word marijuana on MySpace Music. The truth, dear Stasher listeners and readers, is that a good portion of the music out there that includes the word weed, pot, marijuana, reefer, ganja, blazed, etc., etc., is not very good. This shouldn't be surprising. And one could make the argument that most of the music out there, period, isn't very good. But when you start searching for pot-themed songs, you tend to find a lot of silly garage bands with a 16-year-old lead singer who sings about pot because he's trying to rebel against his parents, not fully realizing yet that there's a good chance his parents smoke pot too. I could probably write an essay about that topic, but I won't. So what struck me about Brian's song Marijuana is that it's about marijuana and it's really good. It's a nice light pop song about how screwed up our country is regarding cannabis laws. Simple, straightforward, and catchy. Brian is a Los Angeles-based recording artist who earned a BA in film scoring from Boston's Berklee College of Music. So if you're interested in producing a cannabis-based documentary, he's your man. You can find out more about Brian, as well as listen to other tracks from his two albums, which you definitely should, they're great, on his MySpace page or through his website, and we have those linked at our blog at stash.normal.org. And without further ado, here's Brian Robbins with Marijuana.
Once upon a time in 1776, Thomas Jefferson signed his name on a piece of marijuana, and this document was symbol of freedom and of liberty. At least for the rich white gentry. As time marched along, this plant that I refer to has been used for everything, from medicine to the American flag. And now it seems to me, somewhere along the way, things got messed up. Yeah, got a little messed up. Oh, marijuana, a gift of God to my brothers and to me. Oh, marijuana, now the government wants to test me when I pee. Some said a conspiracy of the petrochemical and pulp paper industries combined in a crazy plot to kill the competition, government hysteria, conflict of interest, and monopoly with total impunity. Yeah, so if you don't buy the conspiracy, just think about the reality that your tax dollars go. Spray poison on the fields of a farmer in South America. And as an added bonus, you don't know who gets to smoke that poison pot. It could be somebody that you even like. Oh, marijuana, the gift of God to my brothers and to me. Oh, marijuana, now the government wants to test me when I pee. Oh, marijuana,
the status quo, but what is the shelf life of bad legislation? The policies fail, deny bail, you made him a demon, now pay for his trip to prison. And the hypocrite smirks, it's a moral disgrace as he reads from a law that was written about the same old time that he had his last original thought. Well, they said the man was dying, and the nausea and the pain left him wasting away, and unable to keep a meal down. So he tried everything a prescription could obtain, but to no avail, cause the side effects were worse than the pain. So now he breaks the law to use the one thing that seems to help him out, and the people say, oh, yo, just getting high. Not to change the subject, but didn't you ever wonder why getting the highs of crime in the first place? Oh, marijuana.
Support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana, and over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Well, as Alan said, I made a call a few months ago, having tapped away on my calculator, until it occurred to me that on the 10th of October, just last Friday, America would cross an incredibly disgusting odometer rollover line. Last Friday, America crossed into the land of having arrested 20 million Americans for marijuana offenses. Starting with the arrest of Samuel Caldwell on October 5, 1937, a few days after the Marijuana Tax Act went into effect, law enforcement has been on the hunt for marijuana users. And hunting was very good in 2007. In fact, the very best year ever. 872,721 Americans were arrested for marijuana offenses.
What was that number again?
872,721. And that was a 5% jump from 06, which was the previous record year. And like a nasty, invasive cancer, this institutionalized arrest machine keeps growing more and more each following year. And this cancer feeds disproportionately on the young and the people of color. And so on October 10, American law enforcement made its 20 millionth marijuana arrest. That's 20 million people fingerprinted, mugshot, handcuffed, incarcerated. That's tens of millions of lives knocked off course, and sometimes with fatal results. And now, after hundreds of billions of dollars expended, making these 20 million arrests, one might rightly ask, what has been accomplished for the good of society? Beyond throwing these people in jail and breaking up their families and confiscating their stuff. What has been accomplished? The answer, nothing. Nothing? Well, what about protecting the children? I mean, that's the line that we all hear. I mean, that's the retort to anything that we say, oh, what about the children? Isn't that the main reason for pot prohibition? Prohibition here fails miserably. Twice as many kids in America, where we've got this draconian prohibition, use drugs and pot as well as use pot in Amsterdam and Holland, where pot has been legal for 30 years. If there's no clearer evidence on the face of the earth that legalization beats prohibition in terms of keeping drugs out of the hands of your children, there isn't any. Pot prohibition makes the problem worse. 20 million arrested. The U.S. Supreme Court has said time and again, they will not fix this social disaster for us. This social disaster requires a legislative fix. Congress must end this 71-year-old tragedy. And what would it be, you might ask? What is it that's going to push Congress over the line to actually do something about this?
Money.
Very good answer. Not only money, but it will end only when America says enough. We can't afford this insanity any longer. Enough. Well, isn't 20 million arrests enough? If that's not enough, what the hell is enough? And as America made these 20 million arrests, who got popped? Who was the person that was led away, put into the back of the patrol car? Was it you? Your mother? Your brother? Your uncle? Your next door neighbor? Your waiter at your favorite restaurant? Tell me, does trashing 20 million decent Americans over this issue make you mad? And if it doesn't, why the hell not? People is like arresting every person in the state of New York. It's like arresting every person in the state of Florida. 20 million people is all the residents in New York, Chicago, Houston, Phoenix, and Philadelphia, America's largest cities. And if there's just one thing that you take home from this conference this year, should be the enormity of this disaster. And as I've spoken about this 20 million crossover here, I'm astounded at the response from this group at large. It's a surprise that everyone knows it's big, but 20 million? 20 million? Are you kidding me? I mean, that's the response I get from the people that know this stuff. Imagine America out there that has no clue how deep we're into this. And as we all know, these arrests happen one or two at a time, one or two people at a time. And it's usually a very personal tragedy, cruel, unjust, even barbaric in its application. America's trail of 20 million arrests for marijuana is littered with wrecked and shattered lives. And it's important to remember those that the government has arrested and broken on this road. The first person in this line is Sam R. Caldwell, arrested October 5, Wednesday night, October 5, 1937, a arraigned October 6, 1937. Sentenced October 7, 1937 to 4 years in Leavenworth Penitentiary for selling two joints. America's first arrest was a paradigm for what was to follow. Sam Caldwell died of stomach cancer 3.5 years after the sentence was imposed. Now let's fast forward 71 years to the 21st century, to Jonathan Magbe of Washington, D.C., who died on October 30th, 2004, while incarcerated for marijuana. Jonathan was sentenced to 10 days in jail for one joint. Jonathan was a 28-year-old black man, paraplegic, paralyzed from his neck down, confined to a wheelchair for 20 years. He was stopped in a car, he had one joint on him, and the judge didn't like his sassy attitude in court and sentenced the little son of a gun to 10 days in jail to get his attitude right. Jonathan required a respirator to breathe at night. His mother tried desperately for 4 days to get the respirator through the red tape of the prison, of the jail in Washington, D.C. And the day she got it through the red tape, they ambulanced Jonathan out the back end of the prison. He had died from respiratory collapse. He drowned in his own mucus. Right in our nation's capital, 4 or 5 miles from the White House, 3 or 4 miles from the DEA. He was just 4 days into his 10-day jail sentence. Jonathan Magbe is the patron saint of unicorns. If you don't understand that reference, about 3 weeks ago, John Walters, the DEA head, was asked about marijuana incarcerations, and he said, "It's so rare! It's so rare. Finding someone in jail for marijuana is like finding a unicorn." Right down the street from us friggin' office, we killed a unicorn. We have to take responsibility for that. And then there's another prisoner, a prisoner of his own body, a guy named Timothy Garron from the other Washington, the state of Washington, the good Washington. Timothy was first in line for an organ transplant. He needed a new liver. And last spring, a medical administrator found traces of marijuana metabolites in his blood from medical marijuana prescribed and administered by his own doctor. And for that grievous offense, Timothy was bounced off the organ donor list and died while this case was under appeal. The marijuana arrest list goes on and on and on, one tragedy at a time. If the 20 million arrestees were standing in a line like people queued up waiting to go into a movie, that line would be 11,000 miles long, halfway around the world. Tell me, is that enough? Is America going to have to make an additional 20 million arrests before we arrive at enough? Now tell me, is 20 million enough?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Anyone?
Yes.
Yes?
Enough.
Too damn much. Well, here we are at the next thing. Well, we're not at the end of this conference, but we're in the company of those on this planet that can do something about this problem. We all have a communal responsibility to assist each other to make sure that the 20 million that we arrested, the 20 million that we arrested last Friday, is the last generation of Americans to be arrested. And it's time to get angry get active, badger those people in public office to do something about this. And one of the essential elements of this whole thing is we need a 21st century update of the Schaefer Commission so we've got the evidence and the shit hat, if you will, when the shit rains down in Congress when they take the vote to solve this problem, that people will have the ability to defend their vote with the truth. Thank you very much.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes. This one comes from a study in 1997, sponsored by Kaiser Permanente, that found, quote, "Relatively few adverse clinical effects from the chronic use of marijuana have been documented in humans. However, the criminalization of marijuana use may itself be a health hazard, since it may expose the users to violence and criminal activity," end quote. Yep, the worst thing about cannabis is that it's illegal. It's ridiculous to have a punishment for a drug that's more harmful than the drug itself. It's time to end adult marijuana prohibition. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us at the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until that time, take care of each other, tokers.